This is MuggleCast, episode 21 for December 25th, 2005. Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of MuggleCast. I am Andrew Sims.
I am Ben Shane.
I am Kevin Steck.
I am Eric Skull.
I am Laura Thompson.
And I'm Jamie Lawrence.
We have a filled room this week. Six people. That is a new record for this show. But only...
And I'm Santa Claus.
And I'm Harry... No, forget it. This is so... We have a filled room
well,
this
you're
week
on a
because
roll.
It is a special occasion. This is our holiday edition. So, before we get started, let's go over to Micah for the past week's top news stories.
Thanks, Andrew. The strike almost made it impossible for me to get to the studios, but anyway. The location where J.K. Rowling wrote chapters of Sorcerer's Stone and Chamber of Secrets is where a granite plaque will be placed to recognize the author. The idea was organized by Robert Watt, a retired teacher. Watt worked with JKR to provide a picture for the plaque as well. The Edinburgh Evening News reported, Mr. Watt has never actually read one of her books, but said that he could still see the importance of recognizing where it all started. Even though she fell short in the voting for Time's Person of the Year, J.K. Rowling did win the 2005 Time for Kids Person of the Year award, beating out Lance Armstrong and the Chicago White Sox. In movie news, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire became the UK's most successful film of 2005, as it has made $75 million in just under 5 weeks. It's beaten out other movies such as Revenge of the Sith, the final installment of the Star Wars series, and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Film critic Roger Ebert recently released a list of his top 10 movies of 2005. Goblet of Fire didn't make the initial list, but Ebert listed it as one of the films receiving a jury award, meaning that some critics at film festivals could easily vote it their favorite. In two of Entertainment Weekly's end-of-the-year polls, Harry Potter has emerged victorious. It was voted Best Novel for Half-Blood Prince and Best Movie for Goblet of Fire. These results will be published in the magazine's final issue of 2005. Furthermore, the fourth film was dubbed Best Fantasy and runner-up Best Trailer by IGN. Ralph Fiennes will be back in Order of the Phoenix. The Lord Voldemort actor recently did an interview with USA Today, where he said he will reprise the role of Harry's foe in the fifth film. Ralph also discussed what it was like to dress up as he who must not be named. In other news, the Hebrew edition of Half-Blood Prince was released Thursday evening in Israel. Haaretz.com reports an initial print run of 120,000. And each year, the world's most popular search engine reveals lots of interesting tidbits from search data they collect. This year, Harry Potter came in 10th under top Google News searches. Finally, for all the latest video clips, screen grabs, and interviews, including Emma Watson's interview with the Chicago Tribune, log on to MuggleNet's main page. Also, be sure to look into the England-Scotland tour that has been designed just for MuggleNet fans. That's all the news for this December 25th, 2005, Christmas edition of MuggleCast. Happy holidays, everyone. I'll see you in 06.
Okay, thank you, Micah. We did promise that Micah would be on this week, but he wanted to tell everyone that it was because of the transit strike that kept him out, because, as you know, there's a big one going up in New York City. Actually, it was just resolved a few hours ago, but yes. Breaking news, first on MuggleCast.
You heard it here.
I found out an exclusive story. But anyway, so this is our Christmas edition, so we're going to bring to you lots and lots of Christmas-themed things. First off, Ben's top 10 list that isn't exactly a top 10 list. Ben.
Okay, this one's a doozy, folks. This one is the best top 10 list we've ever heard on a MuggleCast. And
holiday edition.
The holiday edition, I came up with it. Well, I came up with the collective creativity of everyone on MuggleCast. So, okay, I better tell you what the list is first. The top 10 things not to give Harry for Christmas. Number 10, a pair of Uncle Vernon socks. Number 9, a Christmas card from Azkaban. Number 8, a yearly subscription to Witch Weekly. Number 7, a dragon. Number 6, a gift card to Borgin and Burks. Number 5, a date with Umbridge. That's a good one. Number 4.
I thought that one up is pure genius.
Yep. Number 4, a box of candy from Fred and George. Number 3, this has to be my favorite, Eric. Number 2, a CD of me singing. Ooh, who thought that up? That's actually what that might have been me. Okay. And the number one reason, number one thing not to give Harry Potter for Christmas. This is my favorite of all time. A CD of Pottercast.
Okay.
I thought that was brilliant.
I just like to say it first right now, John, that wasn't my decision.
Yeah, we tried to talk him out of it.
700.
We did.
Guys, we've reached the 700 tally for how many times we've bashed Pottercast on this show. I've been tallying it off.
No, but all joking aside, Pottercast is a good show.
Yeah, we're just messing around.
Yes,
and we do love the Leaky People.
And by the way, people, if you like my top 10 list, send me a email saying to keep it going.
Hate
if you
mail.
Don't like it, send me an email saying, I hate it, Ben, please stop, it just ruins my week. So... I would
I've got an email.
It's a little harsh.
If I get enough of those emails, then I'll
we'll just quit doing it.
Yeah,
let's email him right now.
just one quick announcement. We are the winners of the 2005 Webblog Awards for Best Podcast, so thanks everyone who voted for us. And special thanks to Jeannie, who actually nominated us. Otherwise, we wouldn't have been in it at all, so thanks to her. And a quick reminder, P.O. Box and phone number, we just started... it's an easy way. The phone number is an easy way for you to call us and leave a voicemail, comment, question, suggestion, whatever you want to be aired on the show. That number is 1-218-20-MAGIC.
And also, we got our first letter today, folks.
Really?
I'd like to make a shout out to, let me get your name here real quick. I'd like to give a personal shout out to Tracy Dye from Oklahoma. She sent us a letter about how much she likes the show and how much she likes each of us individually. And then she even sent in a top 10 list. It didn't make it on this week's show, but we'll see about the future. So keep sending in your letters. Send that to MuggleCast, P.O. Box 223, Mound Ridge, Kansas 67107.
Our first letter. I'm so happy. So thank
Ben,
you, Ben.
Post it on your refrigerator.
Now, moving along. Like I said, it is our holiday edition. So... Our main discussion for this week will be mainly Christmas at Hogwarts. Laura.
Andrew.
Laura, you brought up several ideas for us this week.
Yes.
Why don't you start us off?
Well, I was thinking that, like in the Halloween episode where we discussed Halloween significance at Hogwarts, we should discuss Christmas's significance. So we'll start off with doing a little bit of a recount of what has happened in the books at Christmas, in Sorcerer's or Philosopher's Stone, depending on which edition you own. Harry got his invisibility cloak from Dumbledore and found the Mirror of Erised, which turned out being instrumental in the climax of the book. In Chamber of Secrets, Harry, Ron, and Hermione used the Polyjuice Potion to turn into various Slytherins to try and spy on Draco Malfoy, which resulted in Hermione's becoming a cat, sort of. In Prisoner of Azkaban, Harry got the Firebolt from Sirius Black, which Hermione ratted him out on and got it taken away. In Goblet of Fire, there was the Yule Ball, which wasn't terribly significant plot-wise, unless you count the romance and such. In Order of the Phoenix, this is what I think is the most significant thing that has happened in the series thus far at Christmas. Mr. Weasley was attacked by Voldemort's snake. Mr. Weasley was attacked by Nagini while doing his job for Order of the Phoenix at the Department of Mysteries. And in Half-Blood Prince, there wasn't anything terribly significant apart from Harry's little spiff with Scrimgeour.
Oh, hey, that reminds me. In Book 6, no, we got the... No, Book 6 was very significant because we found out... wasn't that when Mr. Weasley called Mrs. Weasley Molly?
No, that was at the beginning of the book.
Why is that significant?
Because that's so cute.
Oh, right, yeah, it is, but I wouldn't call it pivotal in the series as a whole.
Yeah. No, that was at the beginning of the
that's
book.
That's a major plot element right there.
Yeah, it's absolutely... You're so right. It reveals so much about everything.
Although, on Christmas in Half-Blood Prince, that is when Percy showed up with...
Scrimgeour, for the first time
that was
book
when it
half.
All began with Dumbledore's man through
right,
and through.
Right, yeah. So, you know.
For a book and a half.
And that chapter was called A Very Frosty Christmas.
I've got a theory. Well, it's not actually a theory at all.
Oh, okay, Jamie, go.
Okay, well, I was going to say that I don't think Christmas actually has that much significance because it isn't really a wizarding holiday, you know. It's like, I mean, Halloween is, and it just seems like it's just one more day and things can happen. And I mean, important things do happen on Christmas Day, but it just, you know, it sounds like that these things were going to happen whether it was Christmas Day or not. And but also, I mean, things seem to be getting worse as, you know, as we get further in the book. So in Philosopher's Stone, I can't remember what you said happened on Christmas Day.
He got his invisibility cloak.
Okay, yeah, he got his invisibility cloak, which is good. He got that, whereas in Order of the Phoenix, you know, Mr. Weasley got attacked. So things are just going downhill. And also, I think it's a show that even though Christmas is supposed to be, you know, a good time and everyone's supposed to be happy, it's really, really dark times in the wizarding world. And even when it's Christmas, bad things can still happen. So it just, like, emphasizes that they're in a war. And all that.
Exactly.
The end.
I think that's part of Jo just being so realistic with her work and the fact that just because it's a wonderful, joyous time of year, a war doesn't stop.
Yeah, exactly.
I like what you said about it being not that big of a wizarding holiday, and I agree with that because, I mean, presents come out of nowhere for them almost daily at Hogwarts, you know, gifts and parcels and things like that. So the elves, which they know exist, delivering presents by the fire on Christmas is practically expected.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not that.
It also depends on your background. If you're Muggle-born, it might be more prominent.
Yeah.
And really, we don't know, without bringing any type of religious discussion into this, we don't know if wizards have a specific religion that they take part in, or if it's just, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, Wizard of the Month on J.K. Rowling should be St. Nicholas. Should be Nicholas Claus or whatever his name is. Should be Wizard of the Month, just to play with us. I think that'd be funny.
Nick Claus.
I mean, could he make a presence in the, you know, I think that'd be really cute. If the series didn't have to be as dark as it is.
Is Christmas even, like, celebrated in the Wizarding World, or is it just at Hogwarts because, you know, the children?
Well, I mean, they put trees up and stuff. No?
Yeah, but is that just because it's a
school?
But
we've seen it celebrated at the Weasleys.
That's true.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, it's
true.
It's a time for family. You know what actually
but that's what I'm
reminded
saying.
Me of? Well, family dinner with the Weasleys reminded me of the of A Christmas Carol with the Cratchits and, you know, they're underprivileged family and they value love.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
But do you think there's going to be any significance to Christmas in Book 7? Like,
I do.
When I say significance, I mean, do you think she's going to even mention it?
Because I think it'll be mentioned. It's a marking point, so we know, you know, kind of where we are, corresponding the seasons to the story. Usually Christmas is the halfway point in the books.
Yeah, but couldn't you say that Christmas has sort of become much less important?
Yeah,
definitely.
So, yeah.
I think it'll be rushed. It'll just be kind of a hurried thing,
yeah.
And it won't be heavily emphasized.
But in Book 6, in Book 6, as you said, you know, Christmas was hardly mentioned at all, and you know, Scrimgeour came round and Percy came round, but then, it just kind of shows that they don't have time for Christmas anymore since, you know, everything's so hectic and the war's going on. So perhaps in Book 7 she's going to totally exclude it, just to sort of remind everyone how serious everything is.
I definitely don't think that Harry's going to have time to pop around at the Weasleys for Christmas tea.
No.
Well, on the other hand, you could look at it as what they call comic relief, where it's a good opportunity to lighten the mood of the story.
She can't do that, though, because that...
Well, I'm not sure how much comic relief we're going to have in Book 7.
No. You can't say, Harry's just killed, but let's go and celebrate Christmas.
Well, who says he's going to die before Christmas?
Jamie says.
Even if he dies after Christmas. Yeah. Even if he dies after Christmas, they'll be celebrating it.
Well,
and then they'll find out he dies. It'll be awful.
I guess you're right.
So just don't... I don't know.
Christmas has become kind of... Well, it always was. Just another excuse for the Dursleys to torture Harry. I mean, you know, with all their crappy gifts. And, you know, he's kind of... I mean, that's not even important to him anymore. He sees, you know, they send him dirty socks and he gives them to Dobby. I mean, he just doesn't really care. He puts his sneakoscope in him. I mean, it's really not... I mean, I don't even know why they send him Christmas presents just to be nasty. I mean...
No, you know, I don't know. Actually, that's interesting because... They can't do it just to be nasty. It's like, I mean, they don't need to send them. Perhaps when like Dumbledore, you know, said that they have to take him into the house. There are, like, certain things that they have to do.
You must send him a Christmas present, or you will grow five heads.
It's all about, you know, feeling welcome. So, like, I don't know if this is true, but didn't he say that that Harry always has to feel welcome at the Dursleys, and perhaps it'll be the case that if they didn't send him a Christmas present, that would finally tip him over the edge, and he wouldn't feel welcome at the house.
Jamie, I think that's really intelligent.
No, I don't think that's true. What I think is it's a situation, like, you know, you go eat at a restaurant, and you sit there, and afterwards you're supposed to leave a tip, and they say it's more insulting if you leave a penny than if you leave nothing at all. And the way that's analogous is that, well, Harry can't say, well, they probably just forgot. It's more of a thing where we send you a dime, and it makes you feel really shafted. It makes you feel bad about
yourself. I think so, too.
Not to mention, it might look kind of suspicious if Harry's not getting any Christmas presents, and that might make some people wonder. So they might be doing it just to avoid any suspicion as well.
I think that's right. That could be right.
I don't think they would care whether or not, you know, people wondered about his family or not.
Yeah, but then it draws attention to Harry's abnormality, as they would call it, and they don't want to draw attention to that.
Yeah, that's true.
No, how would anyone know? How would anyone they care about know? How would their...
I don't know. If Dumbledore showed up on their doorstep in the middle of the night, I think people might notice that.
Right, but once again, he'd show up at the doorstep and say, you didn't send Harry a coat hanger this year.
No, what I'm saying is...
Avada Kedavra.
What I'm saying, Ben, is that Dumbledore cannot constantly monitor Harry's treatment at the Dursleys. Therefore, he probably doesn't know half the things that happened to Harry. And if he sees Harry not getting Christmas presents, that could tip him off. And we know that the Dursleys aren't exactly... brave towards Dumbledore.
Oh, who are you kidding? You know that Dumbledore realizes that Harry gets treated like crap.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure he realizes that, but I don't think he knows half of the things that happen exactly as they happened.
Do you think he really cares, though? That, like, you know, he knows that... I mean, obviously he cares about Harry, so he doesn't want him to get hurt, but his main concern while Harry's at the Dursleys is that he's protected from Voldemort, so I don't think he's going to go out of his way to make sure that they're getting him proper Christmas presents and that they're treating him right when, you know, if they just turn around and say, no, we aren't going to keep him here, then he's like 10,000 times
more
vulnerable.
Guys, you just got to realize, even by mailing Harry anything, you know, whether it be gifts or crappy gifts or whatever, just by mailing him something, they're giving in to his, as Laura said, abnormality. I mean, they're giving in to, they have to find an owl and get it to send Harry again. I mean, you know, for the Dursleys, who, you know, hate everything that's un-Dursley-ish and wizarding kind, they have to give in every Christmas just to send him stuff. Maybe that's why they send him crap, because they hate doing it. But, I mean, I like what Jamie was saying. Maybe they wouldn't have to.
Maybe they're sending him crap because they don't like him. I think that makes a lot more sense than...
But they still have to give in. They have to give in to the fact that they're... I mean, why would they acknowledge it?
Okay, I think there's only been one reference to it in the entire series, hasn't
there?
No, there's
been more than one.
No,
Harry's gotten socks and tissues
and hangers,
coat hangers. Yeah, you got a toothpick.
Okay, big whoop. I don't think it has anything to do with some hidden...
Well, it could also, like, Snape feeling like he had that obligation to help Harry during Sorcerer's Stone because of the debt he owed to Harry's father. It could be, even though Petunia is not overly fond of Harry, she feels that obligation because, at the end of it, she is his aunt.
Yeah.
Well, right, but what's he going to use a toothpick for?
Well, yeah, at least...
Voldemort's eyes out?
Ben,
you're missing the point.
I think you guys are missing the point. I don't see the point of talking about this
when it's just a little side note that
J.K. Rowling
threw in there. It's not like it's a big deal that I'm sure Aunt Petunia and
you
Uncle
say
Vern
this about
sit there for 364 days each year thinking, oh my gosh, what am I going to send Harry this year?
We never said they thought
that. Ben's being really, really negative in this episode, everyone.
He's a Scrooge.
Okay, it has, but why does it matter?
Because it matters whether they're trying to do it maliciously or they're trying to do it out of necessity.
Yeah.
Because that determines whether or not they're nice people,
exactly.
Which determines what...
Because it could have a lot to do with the ancient magic that protects Harry from Voldemort. It's seemingly minor, but it could have a connection. She likes to do stuff like that.
No, I think it has something to do... I think it's just
J.K. Rowling trying to basically remind Harry of what he has outside of the magical world, how much better he has it at Hogwarts. Because at Hogwarts, he's sitting there alone, and then he gets a package from the Dursleys, and maybe it's sort of, oh, well, better than being with them. So that's what I think it is. I don't think it has much to do with, if they don't send him a toothpick each year, then he's going to lose the enchantment at Privet Drive. I think that's ridiculous.
No, but we aren't saying that. We're just saying that he has to feel welcome when he's, you know, when every single summer when he goes home, he has to feel welcome. However badly they treat him, he has to still think that
I know,
want him
but
there.
Do you think that them sending him a tissue and a toothpick is going to make him feel welcome? That would make me feel unwelcome.
No, but it isn't the point that what they send him is. It's just that on Christmas, as I think it was Kevin said, they're using what they hate the most. They're finding an owl. They're sending him something. Would you really go to all that trouble just to spite him? You know, if you hated something so much that you actually, you know, acquiesce to it and find an owl and send it to him just to annoy him. I think
it'd be a question to ask J.K. Rowling. How do they send it to him? I mean,
owl. It has to be an owl.
Well, okay, but how do they get an owl? Maybe is there a way for Muggle parents to send their kids something without
acknowledging
requesting an owl to come to their house? Like, could they
send
it to Ministry of Magic and they send an owl to the...
Maybe Hedwig goes, and we know that Hedwig has pecked the crap out of people before.
Yeah, maybe she pecks them until they... That'd
maybe
be cool.
Yeah,
maybe.
That's a good point.
I like that.
P.S. The bird bites.
Well, I actually have a voicemail relating to this. From Emma from California.
Hi, this is Emma from California, and I was wondering what you guys thought about how Harry got his glasses. I mean, the Dursleys don't care about Harry, so I don't think they would have, like, taken him to an eye doctor and spent money to buy him glasses. So how did Harry get his glasses? I love Muggle Pass, and I support Emma. Bye.
Rock on. Rock on.
Nice. I think it's to do with school, you know. If you go to school...
Yeah.
You can't see anything, and you're sort of squinting at the board at the front. The school will, you know, make inquiries about it. And here on the NHS, you know, if you don't have any money, you can basically get glasses free in the end. So I don't think it's a case of money or the Dursley's not making him do it. I mean, I can imagine it being the school.
I think it was out of necessity to prevent them from attracting attention to themselves.
That could be it as well, yeah.
Okay, I think that pretty much wraps it up for that part of the discussion. But the Christmas theme doesn't end here. We're going to cover a lot of voicemails right now because we're in a voicemail answering move. So, Kevin, why don't you roll the first one?
Hey, MuggleCasters. This is Jade from London, England. And I was wondering, what do you think Neville's role will be in Book 7? I think that he'll help Harry out in some way to get him moving forward to defeating Voldemort or helping him defeating Voldemort or saving him or something. So, your thoughts on this idea. Thanks, Anne-Marie. Happy Christmas.
I think Neville's turning into a stud, y'all. I think he's starting
Ben
to come into his own,
Neville's
so to speak. Neville's a stud. I think he's coming into his own in that he's becoming more of a real wizard rather than this pseudo-squib that we've seen in the first few books because he didn't have his own wand. He had one that was his dad's, and even though he felt bad about losing it, it's probably good that he has his own wand now, and he could probably perform magic better. And we've talked about this last week, I think, and we said that there's a reason Neville's in Gryffindor, and we haven't really seen that yet. Well, we saw the courage he displayed in the Ministry of Magic, but I think there's going to be something bigger for Neville that we'll see in the future.
Hey, guys, is it possible that we won't see anything? Is it possible that maybe the fact that Neville's in Gryffindor is just to emphasize the similarity that he has to Harry and how...
Yeah, that's interesting.
I mean, he stood up for his friends, you know, or stood up to his friends in Book 1 and stuff, and I really think that he will play a bigger role. But could you think it could also kind of foreshadow the closeness that and the similarity? You know, both Neville and Harry had parents who defied Voldemort 3 times, all that other crap, all the similarities. Like, Neville could have been the chosen one, so it makes sense that they're both in the same house, even
Can
though
I just
Harry
check something?
Chose to be in Gryffindor.
Does he know about the prophecy yet? I can't remember.
No.
Does Neville, okay, do you think if he finds out, it's going to change what he does in Book 7?
I think it would give him more confidence.
Yeah.
I think that, because I think that Neville is actually a more powerful wizard than J.K. Rowling makes him out to be.
Yeah.
And that he just needs the confidence to push him.
Yeah.
So, confidence is everything.
Exactly.
It
so
is.
I think that it's possible that he will find out about,
yeah,
you know, his involvement with the prophecy, and that will give him the confidence to show what he's really made of.
And there I think he will play a big part, though.
I think he will, too. I like what Eric said, and I think that that is probably 100% true, but I also think that we are going to see something big out of Neville in Book 7.
Well, I
just
agree.
Because we haven't really seen him with his new wand yet, what he can do.
We haven't seen his new wand.
Never seen his new wand.
Okay, let's
Neville,
do that.
Neville, back with a vengeance and a new wand.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Let's go on to the next voicemail.
Hi, this is Katie Schneider from Ellicott City, Maryland, and I had two questions. One, why have we seen every one of Harry's Hogwarts classes except for astronomy with Professor Sinistra? Why does her name sound so much like the word sinister? And two, did Voldemort go to Wormtail forcing him to tell the whereabouts of James and Lily Potter, or did Wormtail decide to go to Voldy himself and offer the info? And Eric, don't try to convince me that either of them is really a good guy. Give me your thoughts, and happy holidays.
Oh, come on, neither of them is Barty Crouch Jr. Okay. Anyway,
oh my God.
Anyway, the first part of the thing, Sinistra, I think that was a complete J.K. Rowling moment where she chose not to tell us anything about astronomy until something important happened, such as
the lightning,
such as
power.
Dumbledore getting blown off of it. I mean, you know, the whole J.K. Rowling process is to tell us nothing and then have something big happen there.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like the Department of Mysteries. It was kind of like this mysterious thing, and then all of a sudden we got all of it revealed to us. Now, as I had mentioned before in an episode, important stuff did happen on the Astronomy Tower. That's
yeah.
where they got rid of Norbert and, you know, things like that. But as for the actual class of astronomy, I think it's just a red herring. We were supposed to wonder, well, gee, what's up with astronomy? And then Dumbledore gets blown off the tower, and then we're like, oh, that's what's up with astronomy.
Yeah.
So, and the other thing they had there, what I thought was interesting was that the first astronomy class we did see was the owl.
The owl
for astronomy when they were using the telescopes to spy on Hagrid's hut or whatever it was,
and then McGonagall got nailed by the stunning spells.
Yeah, so that was strange. What was the second part of the question?
Oh, what do you think that Wormtail went to Voldemort or Voldemort went to Wormtail? I think Voldemort or Wormtail went to Voldemort.
I agree. Yeah.
Me too.
Because he's a front runner. He goes to the person who he thinks, in his opinion, is leading the race.
Yeah. Voldemort couldn't have known that he
exactly.
was
Voldemort certainly wouldn't have suspected Wormtail.
Because that's the reason they chose Wormtail for Secret Keeper.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And the reason the Wormtail is so adamant about is he loves to be like with people who are in power.
Yeah.
He's kind of like Slughorn in a way that he likes to be around those who are famous. And since he can't basically build an empire of his own, he has to mooch off others.
I agree with that, Ben. In fact, I think that's
I agree too.
So, next voice.
We all agree on something.
On that,
oh my God.
We do.
On Christmas. Merry Christmas.
Hey, local cast. This is Jackie from Chicago. After listening to your thoughts on how Hermione is portrayed in the movie versus the book, I was wondering if any other characters were the same way, such as Draco. In the books, he seems a little bit more threatening and has a little bit more dignity. In the movies, he's almost been reduced to comic relief. How do you think this will affect how he's portrayed in especially movie 5? Thanks, and happy holidays. Bye.
I think up until sort of book 4, you know, beginning of book 5, that wouldn't have been a problem. But I can't see Tom Felton, you know, portraying Draco in The Half-Blood Prince. I don't know. I can't see him crying in the toilet and being so scared of Voldemort that, you know, sort of turns white and stuff like that and attempting to kill Dumbledore. I don't know. I think in terms of looks, he's a good Draco. And, you know, I mean, his hair is extremely Draco-esque.
I don't know. You basically said that he can't act.
No, I didn't say that. I just... No, because, I mean...
Well,
there are some actors that can't pull off certain things. Like...
One thing that really annoyed me was Prisoner of Azkaban with Hermione and the wand, where he almost started, like, crying from her holding the wand to him.
Yeah, that was strange.
Yeah.
Well,
that was completely against his character.
Well, luckily that was Alfonso's take on things and not everybody else's.
Yeah.
But at the same time, no, I think that kind of goes along with what I wanted to say, which was that the movies are how the plot of the movies calls for. In other words, if they need Draco to be serious and picked on, they're going to show a lot more of that in the movie. But if they just need him for one or two scenes, you know, the important parts of him being a jerk and getting, you know, an insulting Buckbeak, then that's all that's going to really be in the movie. So it's going to come off as more comical.
He isn't just a jerk, though. He isn't just a jerk. You know, you can't. That's such a sort of small word to call him in book six when he almost kills Katie.
Oh, I know. But I'm saying only the jerk part of him showed. That's all they really had time to fit in the movie. And I think they're going to make an effort to fit more of it because they're going to have to.
Yeah.
If they don't, I'll be disappointed. You know, it's just a matter of showing the character a little bit more and where the people who write the script decide to do that with the movie.
Can I just clear something up? I mean, I think he is a good actor. Seriously, I think doing what he does, he's a very good actor. But I think it takes somebody of a lot of, you know, you have to really put your heart into it. And I don't know whether he's had enough experience to be able to do that yet. But I'd have rather, to be honest, seeing Draco in the films, I'd have rather seen him being, you know, quiet and moody throughout the first five.
Yeah, me too.
Four, and then just suddenly come out of his shell and be evil like he does in... But, well, I mean, I say evil, but, you know, that's a whole different story. But, you know, acting evil. I don't know.
It'll be
really interesting to see it, though.
So far, it seems as though they sort of missed the mark with Draco when it comes to his character in the movies.
Perhaps.
They tend...
They
get down his, like, evil side pretty well, but I don't think they fully develop him the way they should.
It's not evil, though. It looks to me like it's just, you know, banter, boyish banter in the first three. It's,
I don't think it's evil.
Then there has to be a huge step up to killing, attempting and trying to kill people in book six.
And you know what, guys? They cut out the scene in Chamber of Secrets. It was Chris Columbus. He cut out the deleted scene with Lucius and Draco and Borgin and Burks. You know, the extended scene anyway. And in that, you see a little bit more about how Draco acts with his father around. And, you know, you didn't even really see that in Goblet of Fire either.
Yeah.
They're just cutting it out and delaying it, and it's interesting.
I think they're waiting for 6 to actually show him a lot. I mean, if you've noticed, he really doesn't play that large of a role in any of the movies so far.
They're keeping the story.
Yeah. His character, like, his appearance keeps getting reduced and reduced as the movies go on.
But they still...
Yeah. Because he's not very significant.
The two things that they emphasize...
The final plot of the movie.
The two things that they emphasize are the connection that Draco is a jerk and that he has a father who's very powerful. That's in all the movies, sequentially.
Yeah.
He's a jerk in all the movies, and then ever since Chamber of Secrets, they mention his father, like when Hagrid tells him about Buckbeak, and in Goblet of Fire when he says, you know, we have a bet that you won't last 10 minutes or five, you know, whatever. So we're reminded that, you know... But I think movie 5, when they show Lucius giving money to Fudge or something like that, I think they're going to start building the Draco
character. Yeah, they're going to have to. Because also, I mean, if you compare Prisoner of Azkaban to Half-Blood Prince, you know, in Prisoner of Azkaban, you've got Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle, I think it was those three, pretending to you know, scare Harry at the Quidditch match by dressing up as Dementors. And that's just a child's game, you know?
Yeah.
How can he make the massive jump from doing that to... you know, sending poisoned
Well, he can't. That's the whole thing. He can't, though.
He's going to have to.
Yeah, but it's all been talk, and that's the problem with Draco. It has all been talk. He's been raised, but can he really go through with it? And he can't.
I think part of the problem with this is starting the movies before the books are finished, because there are always going to be little inconsistencies. We don't know how far Jo went when she was telling Steve Clovis about the plot of the story. I mean, I don't think she ever goes very far.
She had to tell him enough so that he didn't leave something out in the book.
Well, she tells the actors the important things. You got to keep in mind, she does tell the actors the important things, like that if they absolutely need to know it, she usually tells them.
But
like
you have
Hagrid.
To keep in mind, there are certain things that if I were her, I would be afraid of leaking out. For instance, Draco being the one trying to kill Dumbledore in Half-Blood Prince. Do you think that she would actually tell them that that was going to happen?
Not on the first day. Not like, hi, you're playing Draco? Well, one day you grow up and
kill... Well, not necessarily... Not Tom Felton. I'm talking Steve Clovis and the director.
Yeah, but I think they take that pretty seriously.
Yeah, they
Steve
they
Clovis
would never
and
say a word about it.
And I'm pretty sure they're probably in a contract too.
I'm sure. But it seems like there would always be a limit that you would want to take with how far you went telling people involved with the movie where the books were going.
Does this show, though, that, I mean, since Draco does have to make the jump up to you know, killing people, and seeing him crying in the bathroom with Moaning Myrtle, does this show that he can't go, you know, do things like this? He can't kill, so he isn't really evil. So, you know, going from childhood games to being made to kill somebody.
And you know what's interesting?
Can't do it.
Moaning Myrtle feels for him. I mean, she feels for him. She was defending him for Harry. You know, she was defending him with Harry. And here's a girl who was picked on her entire life.
By people like
Draco. Precisely. And Draco, all he does is pick on Harry up until book six. So for Moaning Myrtle to like him, it has got to be a testament to something, you know. Because she was picked on and he's a bully.
Do you think that if Book 6 had came out prior to even Goblet of Fire, or even, say, Prisoner of Azkaban, you know, being adapted into a movie, do you think there would be any difference in Draco's role on screen?
I think there would be a huge difference if all of the books were published prior to the movies even starting.
Yeah, they'd have to be
in the first place,
Honestly, I've never thought that it was a good idea to start filming movies halfway through a series. I always thought that was kind of not the most swift move you could make.
Then with that said, could we be seeing remakes of all the movies down the road?
No,
I mean, that seems a little far-fetched.
No way.
Although, you say no, Jamie, and then you were telling me about Narnia, where Narnia has been done how many times?
Yeah.
So
yeah, look at Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Willy Wonka. Yeah, but they're...
Well, it's not like the plot changed with that movie.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
And plus there's seven of them.
No. Yeah, exactly.
That was a good
thing
movie.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is the first one's a musical. The first one's a musical. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the first film's a musical, whereas the second film's an actual film. So it isn't really a remake. The second one has music, too.
Well, the second one has a lot of songs in it.
Well, the second one focused a lot more on Willy as a character, as an abused child.
Yeah.
You know, and...
It is completely different.
The thing that I find interesting is that Roald Dahl was incredibly disappointed with Gene Wilder's movie, the Willy Wonka version.
I didn't like it.
I thought it was weird how he flipped out at the end, and for no reason it was never explained why he flipped out on Charlie. But apparently Gene Wilder didn't really like that
movie. It was, but we could go on about Charlie and the Chocolate Factory all day, because we all love that movie.
This is Harry Potter.
Let's start a Wonka podcast.
Yeah, go Wonka cast and we'll talk about
Wonka
that.
Wonka cast.
Seriously, everything about those books and movies just rocked.
Okay,
but anyway.
The point is, it can be remade.
I don't know. I can see the movies... If book seven gives...
You'd have to find...
What?
Well, the
okay, maybe not
alienation risk.
Think about the money potential. Think about the money potential.
But there are so many problems with it as well. You know, if you make the first three, you can't go back and say this has been a failure. You can't make three and then say we aren't going to make the further four.
They would have to finish them all.
You have to pick three new characters. You'd have to pick, you know, new characters for everyone.
You couldn't have them exactly the same.
So you'd have to change it. No way. Oh, that's
miniseries. Then you
that's a sickening
rights and
that goes on. Like,
now. What might happen?
I don't know.
Is more of a compilation type movie of all the different plots.
Yeah, that's what I was just gonna say. What if they tried to combine, but then I thought, well,
I mean,
that's a really
A movie, it might be good, because there would be certain things cut, but as
be
being
like a
faithful to the
movie.
Book, it would... No, I'm talking take main plot points from each of the books and put it together into one movie, and where that might make a really great action film, it wouldn't be faithful to the books at all, and you'd have Harry Potter fans all over the world screaming.
But do you think... 70, 80 years down the road, it's possible that they would remake the movies?
I don't.
Yeah, that's all.
All of us are.
It's completely possible.
All of us are old and close to death.
I think 70, 80 years down the road, we're going
to
be dead.
Hey, welcome to MuggleCast episode.
Yeah. Welcome to MuggleCast. Let me get my dentures and we will begin. It's just the show where we bring you the latest in Harry Potter dentures.
Andrew,
Andrew, wheelchairs.
Viagra
treatment.
This is
MuggleCast for December 1st, 2057.
Andrew, can you see yourself editing the show every week from now until you're 70?
That'd be funny.
I can see Andrew doing that.
That's a painful thought.
Hey guys, my name is Courtney. I'm 20 and I'm from Omaha, Nebraska. I was wondering what you guys thought about the things that J.K. mentioned in Book 5 but did not mention in Book 6, like the mirror that Sirius gave Harry and the veil in the Department of Mysteries. Do you think she didn't mention them in Book 6 for a reason to keep us hanging? What's the deal with that? Thank you.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
She totally didn't mention the Department of Mysteries at all, which I thought was incredibly uncharacteristic of Harry. I mean, he goes around school talking, you know, depressed about Tonks, who he thinks is depressed about Sirius, but he doesn't want he doesn't at all mention how unfair it was, you know, that he went through the veil, and he doesn't look at the mirror again. We don't find him catching a glimpse at the mirror, seeing if it still works or repairing it. It just doesn't happen. And I think I really think we'll be back at the Department of Mysteries for Book 7.
Oh, I don't have a doubt.
Definitely.
Yeah.
In addition to
especially that door. That one door.
Yeah, that door, the love door.
Yeah, it has, that door has got to open.
You know what? That was brought up in Book 6. That was the only part of the Department of Mysteries that was brought up in Book 6, when Dumbledore tells Harry that it's love behind the door. The love door is a really cool place where...
The veil, though, I think the veil's such an interesting thing. There has to be something beyond it, you know.
Yeah, but do you think she'll ever explain it?
Yeah, she's,
I think
she's
she'll,
yeah, she has to.
I think
she has to.
No,
like
I think she'll explain it in maybe another, like, one of those charity books. But I don't think it's going to go in the,
But she killed off
no,
a main character with that thing.
It's
she
got
killed
to,
off Sirius with that.
We've got to find out if that's where people go, what happens to them. I mean...
This is reaching very, very dangerous territory to come to a discussion about is Sirius dead.
Yeah, that's
well, not to mention just what Luna said at the end of Order of the Phoenix. You know, didn't you hear them and all that other stuff? You can't just leave that hanging.
And you know what, guys? Didn't J.K. Rowling say that she was going to really elaborate on the ghosts and what it takes to become a ghost and all that stuff?
Yes.
And she hasn't yet. So, if death is going to be explored, you'd think they'd touch the veil a little bit.
Next, V-Mail.
Hey, MuggleCast guys, this is Jeffrey calling from California. I am a huge fan of your show. I listen to it religiously every week. My question is about patronesses. What do you guys think about my theory that a person's patroness and animagus assume the same animal? For example, Hermione's is an otter, so would if she were to become an animagi, would she become an otter? I ask this because we've never really gotten any clear distinction in books, and it's like they would be more or less the same thing. So I just wanted to know your thoughts on that. Thanks. Keep the shows coming. Bye-bye.
No, that can't be right, because Rita's Patronus would be a beta.
That would be a good question for her, though. What's the difference between your personality assuming your animagus form and your Patronus form?
It's true,
form?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be really interesting. What would Harry turn into, do you think? If he became an animagus.
Lion?
Yeah, because Gryffindor, yeah. Ooh,
he turned into Liam Neeson. He turned into Liam Neeson.
I would think a lion.
Yeah, I think a lion would be very cool.
Yeah. So, next voicemail.
Hi, this is Venkami Say from Pleasant Hill, California. I was wondering about the binding contract that is involved with the Triwizard Tournament. Is it similar to the Unbreakable Vow, or does something else happen if the champ... find the champions
bailed
on the tournament.
Oh, yeah. This is very interesting. They say it's a legal
contract.
Don't
die.
You can't really sue somebody in the in the wizarding world.
And I think they really emphasize that in the movie.
It has to be a death thing. I think it has to be a death thing. But the thing is, when you like bring in magic, everything changes because it could be a binding thing so that it's impossible for
you to turn it down.
It's impossible. You just get really excited whenever you think about it and you have to do it, or even though you have doubts, you always end up doing it. So it could be a magic binding contract rather than an actual
Well, you know what?
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know what, guys? What was Dumbledore thinking? And that's a serious question. What was Dumbledore thinking? Now, you have this Triwizard Tournament, which is clearly deadly, and they say that it was so deadly that they had to tone it down a bit. But if you are legally bound to be in it, and Harry almost died so many times, and the rest of the competitors died so many times, if they can't get out of it, it's like a death sentence. Which is why we said that the whole Cedric thing being announced on Halloween...
No, because you can be disqualified from it.
Yeah.
Can you be disqualified from the tournament or just a particular task?
I believe from the tournament. I mean, if...
Because they could have disqualified Harry if they didn't want him... See, I mean...
No, but you have to be able to be disqualified because if you... Didn't they mention if you get caught cheating that you'd be disqualified or something like that?
The thing is, though, how far do you have to compete to fulfill the contract? Like, in the third task, could you just walk in 2 feet and then send out red sparks and say,
Could you give up?
I can't take it anymore. Yeah, and in task two, could you just say, you know...
I'm too afraid.
You know, jump in, then say, I've finished.
That's the other thing. But that's exactly what I'm talking about. They would have let them to drown, don't you think? I mean, that's certainly the impression I got from the movie, at least, that they would have actually let Fleur's sister...
No. In the book, Harry, Ron said, what, did you think he was really going to let us drown?
Yeah, there's no way they would have done.
Well, the movies, the Mer people certainly seem like they wanted to.
In the movie, but that's a movie.
Yeah. You know,
I mean,
I know what you mean. I mean, the books definitely take prevalence. My only thing was, it's not really an honor if you're chosen, you know, if you're just going to get... Just gonna have these trials and suffering and get like almost killed, all for this cup, which you have to get anyway because you're contracted into the.
See the way I always.
Yeah, but here's something too. We know that Crouch Senior was under the Cruciatus Curse, and he could have been saying that just to Imperius, whatever.
Wait,
yeah, you know what I meant.
When was he under the Imperius? When he said that?
I think he was, wasn't he? He was under it the whole book. At least that was the impression I got. Or I could be totally wrong, and Andrew might have to edit this out.
Wait, senior?
Well, this is the impression I got. The impression I got was that the goblet would not spit out your name if it knew that you would not participate. It's sort of like...
Ah,
that
could be it.
The goblet chose. And it chose...
Do you have,
you know,
the will to participate?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's really weird. That's like... What it reminds me of is searching for profiles. You know, it's like a background check on everybody just by their name. You write it, and your name has magical significance in the world for this goblet to look at your character and see if you'd be able to compete and, you know, to pick the best one based on the name. Obviously, there's more magic to it than that.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You know, so I thought that was cool.
Hey, Mugglecasters, this is Stuart from California. I was just wondering whether you think Harry Potter's scar will vanish or will it stay when Voldemort dies, because that's the bond between the two of them. Thanks. Love you guys. Bye.
But isn't the point about a scar is that it's a permanent mark?
Yeah.
I don't think it will.
Think so.
Well, Dumbledore said he'll have that mark forever or something like
well,
that.
Well,
like,
no,
as long
Dumbledore
as he
said, in I think it was very beginning of book one, that... What was his quote? Even if I could remove it, I wouldn't, because scars are there for a reason.
Well, I think
they come.
I think he also says. I think he also says that he'll have that as long as he lives or something. Depends on if his scars are Horcrux anyway. Because
they come in handy though, because it tells him, you know, when Voldemort.
Not to mention, it brings so much attention to him.
I know, really. He would paint it on just to get recognized. He'll be 80 and all lonely and stuff, and he'll just paint a scar on, and then they'll be able to find it.
No, Harry wouldn't do that. Harry.
No, Harry. Harry's. That's exactly. That's atypical of Harry. Harry's not like that at all.
I think
it's going to stay because it is a part of Harry. That's who he
is. Harry. Yeah.
And getting rid of it would be like saying, "I'm not Harry Potter anymore."
That's correct.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
But he might appreciate it because.
Oh, I'm sure he would appreciate it. But scars, again, so. Harry's
no,
got
to
learn that this is
you
who
know,
he is.
At the same time, people will respect him. You know, they're actually witnessing his life. You know, in the tabloids and everything. And as the end of Voldemort draws nearer, they're kind of seeing that it's not an easy task for him. And I think it's not necessarily like before when they said hi to him, they. you know, and they recognized him. It wasn't to taunt him, but now I think they'll respect him more than they will just, oh my god, it's Harry Potter, the guy I read about, you know, years ago.
You said that he'd appreciate losing his scar, but do you really think that if somebody asked him now, right, you know, I mean, I can take away your scar from you and all the things it gives you and all the things it helps you with, do you really think he'd say yes?
I don't think so.
Not right now, he wouldn't.
Without a doubt.
Not right now, he wouldn't.
I think it's a good question what he would do if he was given the choice, either keep your scar or get rid of it, you know, because on one hand, his scar is what makes him so famous, but on the other hand, he hates all that
See,
attention.
The thing is, he hates the attention, but he understands the responsibility.
But it doesn't have anything to do with the fame, though.
No, and but I mean, I once everything's said and done, I'm saying, like, the long run.
Oh, in the
Does he want the scar 50 years from now? You know what I mean?
In book one, it says that he actually likes the lightning bolt.
Well, that was book one.
You know,
but I could see how after everything is said and done, he would want to, you know, pull himself back from the public.
You know what, though? I think he's proud of his scar. In the beginning of book one, it says that he didn't really like his appearance except for the scar, because obviously that was foreshadowing because it linked him to something as wonderful as a magic, you know, world, whatever. But I think at the end of seven, he might be proud of who he is. You know, he's Harry Potter. He is the chosen one. He has the responsibility, and he completed his task.
Part of one big theme that I've seen in the books is Harry having to come to accept who he is. We've seen points like in Goblet of Fire where Harry's wondering what it would be like if he were one of the students not participating in the Triwizard Tournament. What he's got to come to realize is that wouldn't be, because that's not who he is, that's not what he's destined to be, and getting rid of the scar, it would not be him.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh yeah, I was going to say that since you can't block the killing curse, can you, like, get rid of all the stuff it causes? So you could say, like, instead of killing Harry, it's caused that mark, it's caused the scar, and you can't really take away what's already been caused like that. You know?
The power behind the spell.
Go away.
Yeah. You know what? Actually, yeah, and Harry's scar was created with the death of his mother, or the absolute almost death of him, and you can't undo death, so why could you undo the scar?
I think it's going to stay forever.
Yeah.
Me too.
That's if he lives.
Right. If he lives, yeah.
Well, it's not gonna disappear the second he dies. Yeah, he'll die with this guy.
All right, well, that wraps up the voicemails. We were on a roll this time, I think.
Yeah, there were
people.
I think it's a voicemail number. We get more submissions.
That's
good.
Yeah, and it's the holiday spirit.
Yeah, keep sending them in
to keep things rolling. Jamie, you got a British joke of the day for us? Holiday.
Yep.
Edition.
It is kind of holiday related. It has a Christmas and Star Wars theme.
I have been Christmas and Star Wars. I have been waiting for this for like 10 episodes. Take it away, Jake.
10 episodes, eh? Right. Okay then. How does Darth Vader know what Luke Skywalker is getting for Christmas?
How?
He felt his presence.
That's funny on three different levels.
Hey.
I'd give it a good 3.5, actually.
For all you Star Wars nerds out there.
Kevin, you want to do a quick update on book reviews?
For book reviews, we're exploring different ways to bring it to you because it's too long to fit into MuggleCast. So we're coming up with some ideas, and hopefully it will be done in a little while.
But we are still doing The Golden Compass and
The Wardrobe. Yeah, we are still doing those books. We just have to find a format that will work for you guys.
Yeah, hopefully sometime soon after Christmas.
Because a lot of people have shown interest in it, so. Now, as a special holiday treat to you, we're going to tell you a little story. It was, is there an official title for this?
Twas the Night Before Christmas.
Twas the Night Before Christmas.
Quite a popular
MuggleCast
thing.
Edition. This was written by Kelly Egan, who has done some excellent artwork for us that we're going to put up to show you guys this week, some Christmas themed stuff, pictures, drawings of us. It's pretty cool. So let us begin. Everyone sit by the fire and enjoy. "'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the web not a creature was stirring, not even a MuggleNet. iTunes was open and refreshing with care, in hopes that a new MuggleCast would soon be there.
The fangirls were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of Emerson danced in their heads. And I, in my dress robes and matching posh hat, had just settled down for a quick cat nap.
When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from the bed to see what's the matter. Away to the window I flew like a bludger, tore back the curtains and threw out the shutters.
The moon on the crest of the new-fallen snow gave the illusion of several objects below, when, what to my wondering eyes I should spy, but Laura Thompson and all six MuggleCast guys.
With an echo of laughter, yeah, yeah, and hem, hem, I knew right away it was most certainly them. More rapid than hippogriff herders they came, Laura whistled and shouted and called them by name.
Now Andrew, now Mike, and now Kevin, then please, come on Jamie and Eric, before you all freeze, to the top of that porch, at the top of this lane. Surely there's someone here aware of our names.
They took to my porch and promptly rang the doorbell. I respectably answered, and in they propelled. Up into the house, Hold Each Caster debuted with American welcomes, and a British one too.
Thank you, dear stranger, we're awfully pleased. If left out in that storm any longer, we'd freeze. What Andrew means, said the one with fluffed hair, is we'd rather cast inside instead of out there.
Then from Kevin's pocket they dispensed a PC, and all gathered round under my Christmas tree. Tonight we're discussing, inquired Ben Shane. All great importance that Emma Watson sustains.
I agree, cheered Laura, and nods went around. They were better than Ben's, and far more profound.
And so the podcast continued late into the night, ready on time tomorrow to the fans' delight. As I sat to the side observing the lot, my stomach twisted into tight gillyweed knots.
We should do something nice since this fan let us stay. I think we should show her Christmas our way. And you added, Eric, I don't think our ambition settles merely with singing our carol renditions.
Hey guys, said Micah, I got a better plan. We could make her drive the MuggleCast van. Excellent thought, said the cast, all athrive. That saves us for asking Melissa to drive.
No, Micah, you'll drive. This fan is surely devout. She'll see us real soon in Las Vegas, no doubt. So with Laura guiding them off to the door, I shook each hand of the guys I adore.
They sprang to their car, the engine churned and roared. And away they sped, singing merrily off chord. But I heard Ben exclaim as they drove out of sight,
Merry MuggleCast to all,
and to all a good night.
So on that note, I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm BenShane.com.
I'm Kevin Steck.
Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa. Wait.
Hanukkah.
Happy Christmas Hanukkah Kwanzaa. This is Eric Skull.
Happy Holidays. I'm Laura Thompson.
Say Happy Christmas, Jamie. You have to say Happy Christmas.
You do.
Okay, what, just Happy Christmas?
Happy Christmas.
And to everyone, Happy Christmas, and Happy Holidays, and a Happy New Year, and have a great time.
And trust the Brit. Trust the Brit.
Always trust the Brit.
Next week on episode 22 will be our New Year's special, taking a look back at the top stories of 2005, and we will attempt to be the first podcast of 2006. So on that note, Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Festivus, Happy
Winter Solstice.
Happy Winter Solstice. Happy Sunday. Happy Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Happy day.
Whatever it is. Have a happy day.
Happy Christmas to all.
And stay safe.
To all a good night.
Stay
safe.
Have a safe holiday.
Don't trust store Santas.
And could we make this sign off any longer?
Goodbye.
Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Good
night.
Now, as promised, a few song parodies from our listeners. Thanks to everyone who sent these in. Enjoy.
Must stay.
But Voldemort's outside.
You can't go away.
But Voldemort's outside.
This evening has
I
been.
I have to defeat him.
Just like a dream.
Yes, wait.
Did you just hear that scream?
We've got some cushions here by the fire.
It really is a wonderful fire.
This comfy needle rug on the floor.
Destiny's oh such a chore.
The situation can't be that
bad. So
bright.
Warm with you by the fire.
Come on, just a butterbeer more.
Okay, I'll put off the dark lord.
I won't let you go.
Maybe it's bad out there.
I'll cast Imperial.
The beaters are mad out there.
I wish I knew how.
Voldemort's on the prowl.
To keep you safe.
It looks like that one actor Ralph Grafe.
I want to tell you not
to fight. I promise you that I'll be alright.
But I know it's up to you to decide.
It's more than just a matter of pride.
I wish I could stay. And yet Voldemort's outside. Then I'm going to...
Ginny, I fight alone.
I'll fight him with
no,
you.
Please don't take that tone.
Who knows when you'll meet...
Do I have to plead?
The bad boogie curse.
Sweetie, now you're just making it worse.
Boobo-tuber pus, just
how
a squirt.
How would I feel if you're hurt?
One of Fred and George's dung bombs.
This is not making me calm.
Then when he's really burnt,
he'd be furious.
I'll call out, little Tom.
Just like her.
So we've got to run.
Voldemort outside.
My sweet chosen one.
The Dark Lord's outside.
We'll stop to get
Ron. Oh, he's coming too.
And Hermione.
With her. A Hogwarts history.
Who knows if we'll see tomorrow.
And maybe then all that sorrow.
At least we're gonna say that we tried.
I'd like to have you by my side.
I love you so.
We've got to go. Go fight Voldemort
outside.
Shown Emma's man is a jolly, happy soul. With his smarts and charm and witty prose, Emma Watson's heart he stole. Ben and Emma is a dream, Andrew might say. Him she didn't know, but then Matthew told her his phone number one day. Seems true love is magic, because just when Ben's hopes hit the ground, Emma called him up one day and he began to dance around. Oh, Ben, Shown Emma's man was in love as he could be, and the story of them came up in more tabloids than three. Oh yeah, 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 oh yeah, 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 was all Andrew could say. Oh yeah, 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 oh yeah, 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 no restraining order came. Ben Shown Emma's man knew he proved everyone wrong, so he said, "What's up, all of you guys suck, now you all just go away." Down to the movies, him and Emma hand in hand, laughing here and there, her perfect hair, saying, "Oh, I love my man." They walked around all the shops in town until suddenly they stopped. Andrew's sister hit Ben hard on the head, for Andrew's sister felt cheated on that day. She thought she might cry because Ben's her guy. She just wanted Emma to go away. Oh, wow, wow, wow. Oh, wow, wow, wow. And Andrew's sister cried. Oh, wow, wow, wow. Oh, wow, wow, wow. She left and said goodbye. Ben Shown Emma's man was a jolly, happy soul. As it turns out, not one, but two girls' hearts he stole. Ben Shown Emma's man lived happily from that day. He got to go on dates with two girls. Yay, hooray!
Hello, MuggleCast. My name is Julia, and I'm from Sweden. I've written a song for you. It's called Ben's Dream, and it's about Ben and Emma Watson. And I'll sing it for you, even though I can't sing. Ben, Shane, and Emma Watson. Ben, Shane, and Emma Watson. Ben, Shane, and Emma Watson. They lived happily. Ben had Emma's cell phone number. Ben had Emma's cell phone number. Ben had Emma's cell phone number. And called constantly. Thank you, MuggleCast. You're the best. I love you, show. Bye.
Ben Shane, this is for you from Emma Watson.
Benny baby, I just wanted to confirm a date next week. Was it Friday at 8, Benny baby, and hurry down to meet me that night. Benny baby, bring some flowers with you to light blue. I've been acting all year, Benny baby, so hurry down to meet me that night. Think of all the films I've done. Think of the times you were jealous of Ron. Next year I'll be in the fifth. If you'd only come and give me a kiss, boo-doo-bee-doo, Benny honey, I'm sick of being Hermione. Now I'm free until February, Benny honey, so hurry down to meet me that night. Benny cutie, you are sexier than Andrew, you beat Eric by far, Benny cutie, and hurry down to meet me that night. Benny baby, Kevin doesn't even come close, you see. Micah's not as funny, Benny baby, so hurry down to meet me that night. Hurry down to meet me that night. Hurry down to meet me that night.
Happy Christmas, Ben Shane, from Hattie Rumsey in Surrey, England.
Hey guys, this is Jason from California, and before I sing the song, I'd like to tell you that I do like Pottercast too. So, MuggleCast is the best, Pottercast is lame. Micah, Andrew, Kevin, too, and we've got Ben Shane. Hey, MuggleCast is the best, Pottercast is lame. Who wants to hear about Hufflepuff and John? I think's insane. Oh yeah, MuggleCast is the best, Pottercast is lame. Micah, Andrew, Kevin, too, and we've got Ben Shane. Oh yeah.
The next best thing into open fire, rose your nipping Moody's nose. Dark lords, that circumstances are dire, and movie three's got different clothes. Everybody knows, in each book someone's got to go. Half-Blood Prince has taken flight. Readers thought that with one book to go, they need to fill their appetite. They know that fanfiction's okay, can keep them busy reading many hours a day. And every Potterfar is gonna try to argue Snape
Is he good or a bad guy? And so, if any of this fills your days, there's just one thing you should do. If you are obsessed or just plain Potter crazed, MuggleCast is for you.
Now Andrew, now Micah, now Kevin, Ben, please. Come on, Jamie and Eric, before you all freeze, to the top of that porch, at the top of this lame. Right, sorry. Let me go again. Sorry.
You did that so good.
You can use that as an outtake if you want, Andrew.
Is Andrew still here?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, I'm here. Okay. Me and Ben are singing Original of the Species over AIM.
Yeah, because someone talked about confidence and it reminded me of you two.
Give me everything that you want.
Okay.
Except the thing that
Kevin,
you
why
want.
Kevin, why do you have to ask?
I should have just stayed silent.
Come on, guys. You are the first
this
one.
This is where people stop listening.
Oh, God.
And
oh, my God. Shut up.
Oh, come on.
Okay. Katie from Maryland.
On the first day of Christmas, my true love sent to me 5 negative Bens.